I'm Jorge Salazar with the Texas Advanced Computing Center. Our science podcast begins today in the Bardstown countryside of Kentucky, where in 2003, lightning struck a bourbon warehouse. It set fire to a cache of 800,000 gallons of liquor. Some of it spilled into a nearby creek, spawning a massive fire tornado, or bourbonado, as reported locally. Aerial video of it inspired scientists to investigate fire whirls, tornadoes of fire, as something promising for oil spill remediation because the alcohol burned with relatively little soot. Their fire whirl investigations in the lab led them to find something that astonished them. The chaotic and dangerous fire whirl eventually collapsed and transformed into a tame and clean burning flame they call a blue whirl. One of its discoverers is now on a science team simulating the blue whirl on the Stampede 2 system at TAC, allocated by the Extreme Science and Engineering Discovery Environment, XSEED, which is funded by the National Science Foundation. Their simulations have revealed the structure of the blue whirl, a new type of flame that consists of three separate flames. The scientists hope blue whirls can one day be used to burn fuels more cleanly. On the podcast to talk about their study, published in August 2020 in the journal Science Advances, is Elaine Oren and Sao Zhang. They're both in the Department of Aerospace Engineering at Texas A&M University, where Oren is a professor and O'Donnell Foundation Chair 6, and Zhang is a postdoctoral researcher. Doctors Oren and Zhang, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
What are the main findings of your study on flames that are called blue whirls? This study was published in August of 2020 in the journal Science.
This study started as a result of an experimental discovery, which was completely serendipitous. It's a situation which scientists are quite familiar with. Every time you look under the rug, you find something new. A new insect, a new flame. And it was not something we expected. And we were looking at fire whirls for safety and use, which are terrible, devastating things. And we saw a sudden transition from a completely violent, self-generating, more intense, became more intense by itself as it was able to pull in more fuel and air into this whirling, horrible flow. And then we saw this transition happen. Now, that was reported in PNAS, Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. That took us all by surprise, and we didn't know what we were looking at, how it happened. We couldn't explain what it was, except that it was repeatable, and it was much more generic in that it would burn anything. Not just heptane, but we burned gasoline, we burned all sorts of dirty, cruddy fuels, we burned whiskey. We could burn any liquid hydrocarbon with no soot. So the major thing was the theoreticians didn't know what it was. We didn't know what it was. So we felt that simulations were really, really important. The only way we were going to understand this was by theory and simulation. Theory helped a lot, but experiments could give us a lot of clues that we had to match, but we really needed a simulation, a numerical simulation of this flame. And this is what Zhao and Joe Chung, who is not on this call, who's working for SpaceX now, did for their two different PhD theses at the University of Maryland. They constructed new algorithms, a new code, and achieved the simulation that told us what we were looking at. So the main findings of this whole effort, which took 4 years, shall?
Yeah, about 4 years.
At least 4 years. The main result is we now know the structure of this flame in terms of types of burning that we know. We know that it's a combination of many sorts, many types of flames, which come together and sort of form themselves in probably the most ideal configuration for burning, which we had not thought of before. And I guess that's the major conclusion of this piece of work. Xiao, do you want to say any more?
I think, yeah, that's it. So the major conclusion from this paper is that we studied the structure of this new flame through this numerical simulation. And we found out the types of burning and where they occur.
There were a few other points about the dynamics and the flow structure, which we observed and which will require further study. And perhaps some interesting things happened along the way in the simulation, which need further investigation and could lead to things perhaps just as interesting or just as strange. But we haven't gotten to that yet.
What is a simple way to describe what a blue whirl is, and how are they made? Can you find them in nature? Are they just in the lab? Why do scientists study them? Tell us a little bit more about these blue whirls.
Blue whirl, the simplest way to describe it is a spinning blue flame that looks like the perfect top. If it looks like anything, if the top, very top of it looks like anything, it looks like the sorting hat from Harry Potter. It has that same shape. Most of the burning is along a very bright blue rim, which spins. It's a beautiful blue, so far very small spinning flame. And it burns totally blue when it's in a steady rotating state. And it will burn almost any liquid hydrocarbon cleanly, no soot.
So just want to add one more point that you mentioned. There are other blue flames that people saw, but I think the major difference or what is unique about the blue whirl is that it can burn this liquid heavy hydrocarbon cleanly without soot directly. For many applications that we saw the blue flames, it usually requires like pre-optimization of the combustor device or pre-mix the fuel and air. We need to do extra things for it to reach that clean burning state. But this blue whirl itself, it found this state, and we didn't have to do any like work beforehand to achieve this clean combustion. So that's what is very unique and interesting, attractive about this blue whirl.
And then you asked, why do we see it in nature? And I think that is a wonderful question that I have been pursuing. Why wouldn't you see a blue flame in if it were sitting outside? Because it's blue and you just wouldn't see it. It would be obscured by everything in the background. It would be very hard to see if it did occur. But the other thing too is the one that we saw was very small. And we have no idea if it will scale. There were two hints that it might occur naturally. Well, first of all, it takes a lot of fuel to keep it going, you know, just the right amount. You have to constantly feed it. One hint was in a gigantic fire whirl that somebody made in a laboratory that was about 12 feet high. And I thought I saw one forming, but it was only 2 seconds and I couldn't pull it out of the video because of the brightness of the flame around it. The second thing, place where it might have formed is in a wildfire, where you saw all of the transitions that we see, or many of the transitions we see in a fire whirl that lead to the blue whirl, and this is an end state of that. We thought we saw it forming. A fireman took this video with a handheld iPhone, and then what happened at the end, he dropped the iPhone. I think it got boring when the fire whirl looked like it was going out, but it might have been trying to transition. Now, we've argued about whether you can make a big one or not. And I think every argument that I've seen that you can't, you can counter. So the answer is we don't know. We don't see them regularly.
What are some of the computational challenges that you faced in simulating the structure of the blue whirl? And tell us a little bit more about what the simulations revealed.
To simulate these flames, we had many difficulties. So the first thing is that we didn't know enough about the physics of this new flame. So that means we were not sure how can we start off the calculations. We don't know what conditions that we should use. to start off the simulation. As we talked about the blue world in the experiment, it evolved and developed by itself. There were limited diagnostics from the experiments that basically didn't give us enough conditions to use to start off the calculation. So we ended up with a numerical, what we call a numerical hunt. That means we started off the simulation with conditions that's as close as possible to the experiments. And we explored different physical parameter, numerical parameters to take us to the right direction to see these observations in the experiment. So for these kind of simulations, to simulate this blue world, it involves multi-scales in time and space. And also we need to compute multiple physics and also for the heavy hydrocarbon chemistry. This can be very, very difficult and expensive to compute. On top of that, we'll want to keep this 3D dynamics of this new flame. So these 3D aspects added more cost to do a computation. For the fact that we had to do a numerical hunt, that means we need to do many, many calculations of this kind to get to the right condition to see the blue world. And each of these computations is very expensive, and we need to simulate for long enough to capture enough dynamics, enough time for the flow to evolve. To summarize, for these calculations to simulate the blue world, the code efficiency was really important. It can get quite expensive. What we did was we overcame this difficulty by developing some new algorithm, new method to simulate the flow in this low speed regime. So from there, we can reduce the computational cost and find some optimal method, optimal way to do this study. I think you also mentioned what resource, where these computations were performed. So we performed some of these calculations on the XSEED TACC using the Stampede 2, I think it was Skylake nodes.
Skylake.
Yes. We also asked for the tape storage from the TACC wrench. And right now we're working on transferring our data to there. We also use some other supercomputer resources, and they are the Deep.2 from the University of Maryland, and also Thunder from the Air Force Research Laboratory.
So let me just emphasize a few things. First of all, it took new algorithms, new physical models to do this, entirely new code, which was developed with this capability of computing a low speed flow, reacting flow, relatively low speed reacting flow at a reasonable cost. And as Shao said, it was a numerical hunt to try to find the conditions that reproduced the blue world. And in my mind, this is a prime example of what I call computational physics, where you combine what you know with physics with what you know about numerics and try to find a solution to a problem, and sometimes you have no idea where you're going. So the flows and the properties of the boundary conditions were adjusted with a more boundary, you know, faster flow, lower flow, around the initial conditions, as Shao said, from the experiments, to try to find something which looked like the blue world. And there was no guarantee it could happen.
We've been talking about a phenomenon, these blue worlds that are so far are really only known about in the laboratory, and maybe they've been seen, they've been captured on cell phones. How is what you're studying with these worlds, how does it relate to non-scientists?
We think one thing about the blue world definitely potentially beneficial to people is that it can be a new potential way to extract energy from this traditional fossil fuels with minimal amount of soot, with reduced pollution, reduced environmental impact. So that's definitely something that's beneficial to people, to everyday life. And on top of that, blue world is really pretty. So, yeah.
No, I think those are the two main points. And I don't entirely understand myself what the benefits are, except that it's gotten a lot of people very interested in this kind of problem. It literally went viral when it first came out, and then it came out again, and it went viral again. And I don't exactly understand why, except that I think it's very physically attractive.
What's the most important thing that you want people to know about blue whorls?
I think it's the importance of exploration and following your curiosity, trying out a new idea. If we had never seen, for example, the fire on the lake in Kentucky when all of the bourbon spilled onto the lake there and lightning ignited it and it formed fire whorls on the lake, we would never have found the blue whorl. Follow your curiosity.
Also, another point about blue whorl is that it's a new potential to provide this clean combustion. So it is also very attractive for people.
You've been listening to Elaine Oren and Sal Zhang of Texas A&M University. For the Texas Advanced Computing Center, I'm Jorge Salazar.